You are tuned in to the CU Insight Trendline, the credit union industry's podcast for the latest perspectives, shifts, and key content to keep you informed and ahead. I'm Greg Micklig, President and CEO at CUinsight.com, here to bring you the trends shaping our industry every other week, all in under 15 minutes. Let's track the trend. Thank you for joining us once again for the CU Insight Trendline podcast. I'm going to move quickly as we have an extended interview from Libby Calderon, President and CEO of the Illinois Credit Union League, on the Illinois Interchange Fee Prohibition Act and an update that is really important for credit unions nationwide. So we're going to jump in with John Pettit and move into a segment with Whitney Bedard to talk about Google's recent updates and changes around answer engine optimization. From there, I'll have my interview with Libby, and we will move quickly to make sure we get you all of this great content inside of 15 minutes. Enjoy the episode.
I'm John Pettit, and these are my top three trending articles on CU Insight. At number three this week is an article titled, First Party Fraud is the Credit Union Problem Nobody is Measuring, from KSAP's Shanti Shamugam. First-party fraud is one of the fastest-growing threats facing credit unions, and it often looks exactly like a legitimate dispute. Members use their real identities to file false claims, turning fraud losses into what many institutions mistakenly treat as operational costs. The challenge isn't trust, it's visibility. Credit unions need better tools to spot patterns, identify abuse, and protect both their bottom line and the members who ultimately pay the price when fraud goes unchecked. Number two this week is, Your Frontline is Your Future. Why Just a Teller is a Concept of the Past, from Lemonade LXP's Daryl Prale. The universal teller model is quickly becoming the future of the branch, helping credit unions replace handoffs and friction with deeper member relationships. By empowering frontline staff to handle a wider range of member needs and supporting them with better training and AI tools, credit unions can improve service, create stronger career paths, and turn branches into true relationship hubs. The goal isn't just efficiency. It's delivering the kind of personal experience that fintechs can't replicate. Stay tuned later in the podcast for my number one article.
One of the biggest shifts credit union marketers need to pay attention to right now is Google's move from being a search engine to becoming an answer engine. With AI overviews and Google's new AI mode, users are getting answers directly on the search results page instead of clicking through to websites. That means, even if your content ranks well, you may see fewer clicks while still seeing strong impressions. The good news? Content still matters, arguably more than ever. Google is looking for trustworthy, authoritative content it can confidently cite inside those AI-generated answers. For credit union marketers, there are a few things I'd focus on. Create content that directly answers members' questions. Think rates, first-time home buying, fraud prevention, financial wellness, and lending topics. Double down on expertise and trust signals. Showcase your subject matter experts, community involvement, and unique perspectives. Optimize for conversations, not just keywords. People are searching more naturally and asking longer, more detailed questions. Invest in video and multimedia. Google is increasingly using video, images, and other formats to inform AI recommendations. Watch your visibility metrics differently. Impressions, brand mentions, and AI citations may become just as important as traditional click-through rates. The bottom line, SEO isn't dead, but the playbook is changing. The credit unions that consistently create helpful, trustworthy content will be in the best position to show up in Google's AI-driven search experience. And if you want a deeper dive into what these changes mean and how to adapt your strategy, check out the article I'll link in the show notes.
The CU Insight Trendline is brought to you with support from our CU Insight collaborators. Be sure to visit America's Credit Unions, CUES, DCUC, Filene, Level 5, and Meridian Link on our CU Insight collaborators pages and watch for their content throughout our CU Insight platform. Without a doubt, one of the trending topics in the credit union industry is interchange on card payments. One of the key battles taking place is in Illinois. I was privileged to have some time with Libby Calderon, President and CEO of the Illinois Credit Union League, to discuss the Illinois Interchange Fee Prohibition Act, also known as IFPA. Here's my conversation with Libby. Libby, thank you so much for joining me and discussing this really important topic. You know, what's the latest with the Interchange Fee Prohibition Act in Illinois? And what are the next steps now that the effective date has been extended?
Well, you know, I'll just give you a quick history for listeners who need to be brought up to speed. So the Interchange Fee Prohibition Act, which we often dub IFPA, originated back in the spring session of 2024 with our General Assembly when it was tucked inside a budget bill. And it originally had an effective date of July 1st, 2025. The provisions of IFPA include a prohibition against collecting interchange on the tax or gratuity portion of a transaction. And so when we first heard that, we said, boy, that's complicated. Knowing how these systems work, knowing how interchange works, how it's integrated against so many different players, so many different stages of a transaction. And to some extent, we're a victim of our own success with interchange because we've made it so seamless and easy for consumers. They think it happens magically, but yet there are lots of steps happening behind the scenes to make interchange work so seamlessly. So the bill was introduced immediately in 24 in that summer. The Illinois Credit Union League, along with our co-plaintiffs, America's Credit Unions, the Illinois Bankers Association, and the American Bankers Association, all joined together and we filed suit in federal court against this law. You know, the wheels of justice take time to work their way through. So we approached the July 1st, 2025 date and did not have resolution in the courts, so we were able to get an extension last year's spring session 2025 in the Illinois General Assembly. Fast forward, we got a decision in our court case finally in February earlier this year. It was not a decision in our favor, so we appealed that court case. And all of these things are happening simultaneously. Of course, the clock is ticking towards that, the 7/1/26 due date. And so we appealed the decision. That happened in February. And then in May, the OCC came out with an interim rule that basically gave national banks preemption against complying with this law and said that the National Banking Act was sufficient to give national banks preemption. The appellate court heard that then and sent the case, remanded the case back to the district court and said, in light of this new information, district court, take another look at this. So the district court was taking a look at it. Well, now we're again approaching that deadline. So just this past weekend in our spring session in Illinois, we were able to get another extension granted. So now the effective date is 7/1/27. So we were able to move that extension date along. That's great. Literally 12 hours after we got that extension, the judge released her decision. And her decision at the district court was that, in fact, national banks do have preemption now. And so she permanently enjoined national banks from having to enforce IFPA with them. So it extended to national banks, savings associations, and state chartered banks outside of Illinois and the networks. So the only parties today, based on that judge's decision, that are subject to IFPA are credit unions and state chartered banks within Illinois. So that's the landscape even as we speak right now. The NCUA published on OIRA a few weeks ago that they were going to be releasing a rule regarding IFPA in Illinois. That rule has not been released yet. So we'll see what happens in court. I suspect maybe a similar thing will happen then in court as a result of the NCUA rule once it comes out. And we're optimistic that we will get a decision then that also gives credit unions, certainly federally chartered credit unions, relief from IFPA. So next steps then would be, once that court's has settled a bit, now we're sitting with only state chartered credit unions and state chartered banks in Illinois being subject to IFPA. I don't think that was ever the intent of the Illinois legislature to disadvantage those institutions. So that helps us in our argument going back to them and saying, look, the court case has resolved itself to this extent. Can we get a repeal of this bill?
Well, that's good. It's obviously a fast changing landscape, as you mentioned, which advocacy often is. And just kind of talking about just the Illinois piece, but how it affects credit unions, leagues, everything nationwide. Obviously, there's that interconnectivity of the industry. And so, you know, what should other states be doing to combat the spread of this type of interchange related legislation outside of Illinois?
Yeah, as we talk to other states, and a lot of other states have called us about it, it really starts with education. And I would say it's education of your lawmakers within your state, helping them understand interchange. Show them diagrams, if you will, as to how it works. But getting that understanding of how complex the process is, because we've talked to lawmakers here in Illinois, and some think it's, just a line of code that needs to be rewritten. And we've tried to explain that it's a lot more complicated than that. So I think getting in front of it and educating about the complexities of that whole system is really, really helpful to do. Like I said, we're victims of our own success. We've made it so easy for transactions to happen, and people think it's very simple. So I would urge the education. And then, lawmakers, we've also shared some messages that let lawmakers know that anything you do in this space is probably going to be challenged in court, which also then, that costs money, and that costs money for states to defend those cases and enforce. So, I think states should be cautious of that as well. Having 50 different interchange parameters operating around the country is a system that no one wants. And we have a system that works right now. So I would urge states to educate lawmakers and let them know that the system works now and it works really well. And consumers really appreciate it. There are tons of studies out there that you can share with lawmakers about how much consumers and merchants value the current systems that are in place. So I would educate lawmakers about that as well.
Well, thank you for your leadership on this and the Illinois Credit Union League's leadership alongside with the other trade associations that you're working with. Greatly appreciate you taking a little time to join me on the CU Insight Trendline podcast to share that information. Thank you, Libby.
Thanks, Greg.
For more information on the work the Illinois Credit Union League is doing on this issue, visit icul.com/advocacy/IFPA/. And now here's John with our top trending article.
Welcome back. My number one article trending on CU Insight is why recent OCC and NCUA actions could be a game changer for state chartered credit unions. From University of Illinois Community Credit Union's Susan Tolson McGinty. What started as a fight over Illinois interchange fees has become a broader debate about charter parity. Recent actions by the OCC and NCUA strengthen protections for federal institutions and add momentum to efforts to secure similar treatment for state-chartered credit unions. While the work isn't finished, it's an important step toward a more level playing field across the dual charter system. I recently asked Susan, if parity is not ultimately achieved for state-chartered institutions, do you think this could accelerate charter conversions toward federal charters? And what would that mean for the long-term health of the dual charter system?
Thank you for the opportunity to talk about parity between state and federal chartered institutions. Some news as of yesterday, May 31st, the Illinois General Assembly made a decision to delay implementation of IFPA for another year, and that's very, very good news. It gives everyone, regulators, legislators, financial institutions, and the courts, additional time to work toward a solution that avoids member disruption. And let me tell you, member disruption is 100% what the University of Illinois Community Credit Union has been focused on and other credit unions within the state of Illinois. But the larger conversation around parity does remain, and it's important. Credit unions should be able to choose the charter that best aligns with their mission, members, and communities, not because one charter is placed at a disadvantage. One of the things I have appreciated about the dual charter system is this opportunity for choice. And that allows state chartered credit unions like UICCU to remain closely connected to the communities they serve here in Illinois. I think that's healthy for consumers and healthy for our financial ecosystem. The recent OCC and NCUA action does give me hope that we're moving in the right direction. My hope is not that institutions feel compelled to change charters, but that parity is preserved so that both federal and state chartered credit unions can continue to focus on what really matters, and that is helping our members and helping our communities achieve financial well-being.
Thank you, Susan. That's all for my top three trending articles. See you soon.
Thank you, John. And thank you to all who tuned in for this episode of the CU Insight Trendline. The team and I will be back next time with more trending updates to keep you informed and ahead of the curve. Until then, we'll keep tracking the trend.